Our next presenter is Paul Branscombe, and he is going to be talking to us about an evaluation of an overweight prevention program called Food Fit. Paul is currently a doctoral student at the University of Cincinnati in Health Promotion and Education, but he comes to that with degrees in nutrition from Ohio State, and he's a registered dietitian and has served in the Army National Guard, which I'm presuming is a dietitian, and so which is good to have that perspective. So we'll hear from Paul at this point.
All right. Well, thank you. I want to thank everyone for coming out today to listen to me speak about some really exciting outcomes from Food Fit, which is a curriculum that my advisor and I created from Ohio State. So as we all know, childhood overweight has increased, especially in the last three decades. And some believe that childhood-based health-promoting interventions is one strategy that we can use to help alleviate this problem. They have the potential to prevent the onset of overweight in childhood and then promote a healthier lifestyle into adulthood. And they also have the potential to curtail future healthcare costs, which we know are starting to really increase due to childhood overweight. Some of the most successful health-promoting interventions have been Planet Health, which was geared towards obesity prevention, and Gimme 5, which is geared towards fruit, juice, and vegetable consumption. It's also important to know that a lot of the most successful health-promoting interventions that have been done with children have been based on social cognitive theory of behavior change. It's also important to know that many health-promoting interventions have also resulted in mixed or modest outcomes, and this has been thought to be due to many limitations that have been noted, for example, in their methodology, their design, the implementation, and the evaluation. For example, many interventions tend to be informative rather than build self-efficacy, which is an important construct of social cognitive theory that would predict behavior change. And therefore, there tends to be a need for certain types of interventions. So, for example, we all know that randomized controlled trials tend to be the gold standard for evaluating interventions. But research is saying that maybe we need to take a step back and do a little bit more intermediate studies to really figure out whether or not these interventions are giving us the outcomes that we're proposing they would give. Then there's also the thought of single component versus multi-component. And obviously, for randomized controlled trials, you'd want a multi-component study. But when it comes to the intermediate studies, maybe some more studies on the single component to figure out whether or not these interventions, again, are giving us the results that we would expect. So, for example, it makes sense that we'd want to add physical activity and nutrition together as part of a health-promoting intervention. But we also need to know whether or not does this nutrition intervention give us the results on its own versus the addition of other components. And then again, there's also a need for interventions to be theory-based, and social cognitive theory tends to be the theory that has been the most successful. So Food Fit was an intervention that my advisor and I created. It attempts to overcome the limitations that I just noted, and really focuses in on specific recommendations and targeted messages. So we all know that eating 5 to 9 fruits and vegetables is what's recommended, which would be a great message to give during an intervention. But what we wanted to do was really have those messages be really focused. So you can see lesson 5 and 6, eating whole fruit for breakfast and snacks. So instead of saying eat 5 to 9, it's eat whole fruit at breakfast. Or lesson 6, have raw vegetable for a snack. It's a very concrete goal that they can really wrap their arms around instead of having them to figure out how they're going to do 5 to 9 a day. And you can see the other lessons. We really wanted to go for specific and targeted messages. And they're also consistent with the American Medical Association just came out, actually after we did our study, with committee guidelines, which were for the prevent what we should do for prevention and treatment of childhood overweight. So each Food Fit lesson has a very similar process in that there are these five modules that the children go through. There's an introduction where the key objectives are introduced to the children. There's a benefits and consequences section where they participate in hands-on activities so they can capture the abstract concept. So, for example, it's really hard to show calories in a body to kids, and the calories are in food. So we use balls to represent these are calories, and this is what happens when your body has a good amount of calories or too many calories. Modeling and taste testing are two important constructs of social cognitive theory. The instructor is modeling behaviors and encouraging the children to taste test new foods. Role playing gives the children a chance to practice all the skills that they've learned through the lesson. So we put them through a situation where they're maybe with their parents and they're in a grocery store and they walk next to the fruit aisle and trying to prepare them with, what would you say to your parent if they didn't pick any fruit? Or what if you were with your friend and it was a sleepover and you're having breakfast? What would you say to your friend if they wanted to have a high sugar sweetened cereal and maybe you wanted oatmeal or a low sugar sweetened cereal? And finally, a wrap up where the key objectives again are made sure that the children understand what went on during the lesson and they also participate in a goal setting activity. The three psychosocial variables of social cognitive theory that we really wanted to target and evaluate through this intervention were behavioral capabilities, which are their skills and knowledge in order to perform behavior, their self-efficacy, which is sort of their confidence in their abilities, and outcome expectancies, which is the value that they place on the outcome of a behavior. So we really thought these variables were really needed to evaluate whether or not the intervention had an impact. And so this was the model of social cognitive theory that we were working with, and you can see self-efficacy, skills, outcome expectancies, and how they relate to behavior. And this is how FoodFit, the teaching methods of FoodFit, try to impact those psychosocial variables. So you can see it was very specific what we did to try to impact certain psychosocial variables. So we had approval from IRB in 2007, and FoodFit was implemented as part of a service learning component of a class, which is Human Nutrition 704. These are senior dietetic students who, a lot of them want to be dietitians. We had about 60 students, and they were split in about 10 groups, so about 5 to 6 students per group. And then those groups were assigned to one of 5 YMCA-sponsored after-school programs that we were able to implement FoodFit at. We had 58 children signed up for the project, about mixed, male and female, a little bit more Caucasian, and most of the kids were in 3rd or 4th grade, which is something that we see during after-school that tends to be more children in kindergarten, and then they start to lose it in 1st, 2nd, 3rd. And once you get up to 5th and 6th grade, you really start to lose numbers. Parents trust them to be at home, so they're not participating in after school like the 3rd and 4th graders. These were the participation rates, so we wanted to make sure we tracked participation. What we considered a completed lesson was the completion of a pre- and post-test that was given each lesson that I'll be talking about in a second. We did process evaluations for each lesson, for each group. Each lesson had about 50 to 70 subtasks. This is an example of what they look like. So you can see it's a checklist that an outside observer would watch the lesson, and as they're going through, they just check whether or not they did that certain aspect of the lesson. And we're really happy with our results with the process evaluations. We were hitting about 100% with all of our groups. Here's the group 6 through 10. So we were really happy that we were batting about 100% most of the time when it came to was the process of the lessons being implemented the way in which they were intended. So there were three major aims of the study that we really wanted to look at. And the first aim was really looking at whether or not the children that were going through the lessons, did we impact their social cognitive theory, psychosocial constructs, their behavioral capabilities, their self-efficacy, their outcome expectancies? Did it have an impact before looking at that before and after. So we did a pre and a post test per lesson to see whether or not participating in the lesson was able to impact. We evaluated behavioral capabilities through a skills assessment, and self-efficacy and outcome expectancies were evaluated through self-report. So they answered agree, neutral, or disagree to statements for self-efficacy. It would be, I am sure I can, the behavior. Outcome expectancies would be, I want to, a behavior. And so, for example, lesson one was choosing lower-calorie snack foods. So we really wanted to focus in on snack foods, and you can see that across a lot of our lessons. They're given these three items to answer questions like, which one of these letters is the food label? How many calories are in the potato chips? If you were going to pick one of these snack foods, which would be the lower calorie snack food? So it's really taking them through all the sub skills that it would take in order to choose a lower calorie snack food. So these are examples again of what the pre and post test looked like. Each pre and post test was only about 8 or 9 questions, so it wasn't too intensive. Again, which letter was the food label? I'm sure I can identify food labels on my own, or I want to read the food label to choose a lower calorie snack food. So, and these were the items that they were given on post test to make sure that, you know, that they weren't the same on pre and post, and they were asked the same questions. What we did was we created a composite score for each of the constructs, where they were given 1 point for a correct answer for behavioral capabilities, 0 points for an incorrect, and then 2, 1, and 0 for agree, neutral, and disagree for the self-efficacy and outcome expectancies. And these were our outcomes. So we saw a significant increase in a lot of the behavioral capabilities, and again, a lot of significant increases per lesson. So what this is per lesson down the left-hand side, and then the N, and then their scores for pre and post, behavioral capabilities, self-efficacy, and outcome expectancies. So what we saw was, you know, behavioral capabilities popped up good, self-efficacy popped up pretty good, but outcome expectancies, not so great results, which is something that I'll talk about in a second, but you would expect that be easier to impact someone's skills. I mean, we can teach skills, and then they can perform them back pretty easily. Self-efficacy, their confidence in their skills by skills practice, we can enhance self-efficacy. But again, outcome expectancies that I want to, something that's a little bit more difficult that we can all appreciate to really impact. Aim 2, so control-free choice was a evaluation that we did right after the lesson where we gave children, I'll show you, we gave children a choice between 3 different food or beverage items about the lesson. So for example, we can look at lesson 3. The lesson is about choosing beverages without added sugar. And so the whole lesson, they're learning about how do you read sugar on a food label for a beverage. Water is a great example. It's a great beverage to drink. And then after the lesson, we said, okay, we brought some drinks for you guys. You can have water, Sprite, or lemonade. And then we asked them, well, why did you pick that after they picked them? We did some comparisons. And what we found was that most of the time the children, it's kind of off, but most of the time that what happened was the children picked the unhealthy choice over the healthy choice. And we were really wondering, why is this going on? And we looked at the why. Why were they picking these? Why would they pick the unhealthy choice right after they've had a lesson about why it's better to pick the healthier choice? And what we found was that children who pick the unhealthy choice tend to say, well, it's because it tastes better. And the children who picked the healthy choice said, well, it's because it's, you know, for lesson 3, I picked the bottle of water because it didn't have sugar and it's better for my body. So the kids who were picking the healthy choice tend to say, for a health reason, and the kids who pick the unhealthy choice tend to say, well, it's because of the taste. And that's what social cognitive theory would predict, that, you know, if you value one over the other, you're more likely to have that behavior. I really don't have time to go through this, because I really want to get to the dietary outcome. So before and after the intervention, we gave a food behavior checklist, which is a validated tool out of University of California, Berkeley. Questions were either yes, no, or frequency-based. So do you eat more than one kind of fruit daily, yes or no? We made a composite score with all the yes-no questions, where we gave them 1 point for a yes, 0 points for a no. So the score was anywhere from 0 to 14, and we also evaluated each question in the, using Niemer's test. And we saw a significant increase in their composite score for their eating. And these were the four questions that significantly increased, which we're really happy to see. That, for example, during the past week, did you have raw vegetables? That was a specific and targeted message of lesson six, eat raw vegetables for a snack. So real happy to see that we saw significant increases in that lesson, and then we saw significant increases in that behavior for the dietary assessment. The cluster analysis put frequently and less frequently children into those groups. We didn't see a significant difference between that. And then we also did diet perception. So real quick, on the food behavior checklist, it asked the children, how do you rate your diet? Poor, fair, good, very good, or excellent? And what we did was we compared that to how they scored using the composite score. So are they saying excellent when they're saying, no, I don't eat vegetables, no, I don't drink milk, I always, you know, eat high fatter foods, I always drink sugar sweetened beverages? We're looking to see whether or not that correlated or not. And what we found was that pre-test it didn't, post-test we found that kids were able to better self-select themselves into each category. So I think that's all I'll get into, so thanks.
And see if we can get to our next section here and get that loaded.